Welcome to CDH Conversations. My name is Emily West, and today I'm joined by Gretchen Barquez and Barbosa, and we discuss the importance of wills in honor of National Wills Week, which is the 15th to the 19th of September, 2025. We've decided to do a quick discussion regarding the importance of wills and estate planning, because I think lots of people don't understand the importance of having a will. Without a will, an individual will die intestate, which means that their estate will be administered in accordance with prescribed rules. What does that look like, Gretchen?
Thanks, Emily. So the Interstate Succession Act provides that, put very simply, the closest family members of the deceased will inherit. So for example, if the deceased passed away with a spouse and children, there's a formula that dictates how the distributable estate will be split between those beneficiaries. It's a very simple formula that is applied. It's also not a very difficult piece of legislation to interpret. The problem with one's estate devolving in terms of the Interstate Succession Act is that obviously the wishes of the testator or the deceased is obviously not honored because he didn't express them in a last will and testament. So you don't have much of a choice as to who will benefit from your estate. And it becomes quite problematic, for example, when a deceased passes away with a spouse and minor children, for example, then the spouse has to hold the assets that she inherits with minor children that will obviously limit her ability to freely deal with those assets. Furthermore, there's obviously no will, so there's no provisions regarding testamentary trusts or other provisions that deals with how the inheritance for the minor children must be held. So the default position in South Africa is that the minor's inheritance must be converted into cash and paid into the Guardian's Fund, which is a fund administered by the Master of the High Court. And it's obviously quite problematic to claim from the Guardian's Fund, and overall not a very satisfactory position. From a practical point of view, interstate succession also delays the finalization of the administration of a deceased estate quite a bit, in the sense that all of the interstate heirs then have to nominate for an executor to be appointed. So that can delay the process because there's not always agreement amongst the family members who should act. It further also limits the possibility of a foreign child, for example, a child that is not normally resident in South Africa, to, for example, act as a co-executor of the estate. So lots of practical problems with administering an estate in terms of interstate succession. So generally not a preferred option.
So let's look at a will generally. There are obviously, as Gretchen said, pitfalls to failing to have a last will and testament. And let's have a look at the provisions of a will to explain the benefits of having one. So generally, as Gretchen has mentioned, you can nominate an executor who can be someone that you are comfortable with, a family member or a professional person. There's also scope to negotiate executor's remuneration, which in South Africa is a prescribed tariff. If you have a last will and testament, there is scope to negotiate the executor's remuneration with the executor named in the will. So the importance of having an executor with the experience in administration of estates cannot be stressed enough. And the individual drafting your will should ideally have estate administration experience. The reasons are because they need to have sight of things that can go wrong during the administration of the estate and provide for them in the will. So one of those examples is where a testator has business interests, for example. An executor does not, at common law, have the ability to continue running a business. So in the instance where the deceased is the sole director of a company, you're left with a position where the company cannot be run during the course of the administration, which of course could lead to a loss of significant income. So your person drafting your will must have sight of what your assets look like in order to make sure that the will is drafted suitably for your circumstances. So that's speaking to the powers and the executor, Gretchen, but who else can you nominate in a will? What other capacities are you dealing with?
Yeah, Emily, so you can obviously also have regard for trustees that need to be appointed for any trusts that you create in terms of your last will and testament. And you can also have a regard for who you would like to be the guardian of any minor children should the parents of the minor both be deceased at that point. So I think those capacities are very important to have a good think about and to consider quite carefully. For the trustees, I think it also becomes very important to consider whether there should be provision for foreign trusts, for example, to be created in terms of your last will and testament. So that might be necessary where your minor is that stand to inherit in terms of your will are not based in South Africa. So a quite common scenario would be where the testator is a grandfather or a grandmother, and then the first instance nominate their children to inherit, but failing a child, the descendants, the grandchildren, will then become entitled to inherit. So then it would be important, for example, to consider where are these grandchildren? Where will they be living on a day-to-day basis? Would it make sense for there to be a South African trust created for that grandchild that is not normally resident in South Africa? And so the will is an excellent opportunity to make provision for a foreign trust to be created and to provide either the executor that's attending to the administration of the estate or the trustees of the initially created South African trust to then onwards create a foreign offshore trust for those grandchildren. So the trust provisions are very, very important. I must also say that people are very aware of nominating the correct executors in their estate, but I think often overlooked is the importance of the trustees that will have to manage these testamentary trusts on behalf of these minors. It's not only, of course, testamentary trusts that are created for minors. Those are just the most common form that we see created in a last will and testament. You can, of course, create a trust that are intended for other individuals, not only minors, and their purpose is to have a little bit more longevity than just a specific age for a minor child. And it's important that you nominate the correct individuals, especially if you're looking at a trust that have a little bit of a longer lifespan than just waiting for a minor child to attain the age of 18 or 25 or whatever the case may be. Those individuals will have to have the necessary skill to, after the estate has been finalized, carry on the trust administration on behalf of the beneficiaries.
So the will is the trust document, essentially. And so it's very important that it's drafted properly if you are going to create a testamentary trust, because the only way to amend that document after your death is by way of a court order, which can be costly and expensive and time consuming. So that's another consideration, is the drafter of your will should have experience with some trust administration to foresee issues, like I've mentioned with the executor having estate administration experience. So the jurisdiction of your is important, but the jurisdiction of your assets is also important. This is because certain jurisdictions require separate wills. Certain jurisdictions do not acknowledge freedom of testation like we have in South Africa. And so when drafting a will, it is important that you communicate fully your asset position to the person drafting so that they can properly advise you as to the documents and the way the document should be drafted and signed, because different jurisdictions also have different execution requirements. What other comments do you have in that regard, Gretchen?
I mean, just to add on to the knowledge and expertise by the executor, I think also a lot of times it's overlooked how beneficial the specialist knowledge of a professional executor could be when it comes to things like possible estate duty deductions, etc. I think a lot of deceased estates are losing out and paying too many taxes because the administrators are not necessarily as au fait with the estate duty provisions and the exemptions that are allowable under the Act.
That applies as well to foreign jurisdictions and situs taxes in those jurisdictions. So when drafting a will, the drafter must be aware of what your assets look like so that they can advise regarding potential taxes that you may not be aware of and may not have liquidity in your estate to deal with. They would advise you whether to include certain wording in your will to perhaps avoid implications that do not suit your current circumstances or your intended outcome. And the drafter of your will can also advise you to take into account things like whether or not separate probate processes are due to be undertaken in different countries, which is a separate administration process that may be needed to be undertaken, which will have costs associated with it. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So when approaching an individual to draft your will, it's important that you have a holistic conversation with them. So while they are hopefully aware of the things to be cognizant of when speaking to you and ask you the right questions, you should approach someone with a family tree, consideration of who your dependents are, consideration as to whether or not you have a divorce order that may be binding on your executor, whether or not there's a liquidity issue that may need to be addressed while you're alive by taking out a policy, for example. On the issue of policies, Gretchen, what is an asset? What does someone need to consider when presenting this sort of information package to the person drafting the will? What's important in that regard?
So often when we consult clients, they already have a preconceived notion about what they think form part of their estate and what will be governed by the provisions of the last will and testament. For example, things like living annuities and life insurance policies that you normally have a nominated beneficiary for, those kinds of products would not form part of your estate in the sense that they would devolve in terms of the provisions of your will. They would, of course, pay out to the nominated beneficiary that you have already supplied the financial institution prior to passing. They are, however, added back for the estate duty calculation depending on who the nominated beneficiary is, but they are not, strictly speaking, determined by the provisions of the last will and testament. Likewise, a pension fund, for example, your provisions of your last will and testament will have no impact on how your pension funds are distributed. The trustees of the pension fund will have regard for any nominations that you put forward during your lifetime, as well as any statutory beneficiaries as defined in the by the Pension Funds Act. So it's important that a client understands when they give instructions for a last will to be drawn up, what is included in the provisions of the will and what really isn't that forms outside your estate for the purposes of drafting your will.
So some people have the impression that if they do not specifically mention an asset in their will, that that asset somehow does not form part of their estate and does not need to be dealt with during the course of the administration of their estate. That is obviously incorrect. We often see people wanting to execute a letter of wishes to their will. So a will is obviously a legally binding document, but a letter of wishes is not. And so we see trouble where, for example, an individual has a collection of paintings and wants to specify in a letter of wishes which beneficiary is to receive which painting. And then there's a dispute later on between the family where they don't want to honor that letter of wishes. That can create problems during the course of administration of the estate. So one, it's not important to deal with every single last asset in your estate, although people often want to do that. And it's advisable not to, because it can have implications on the liquidity of your estate and dealing with liabilities, etc. But then on the other side, it's important that you don't not mention assets with the view to trying to exclude them from your estate, because they are in any event excluded and there could be tax implications which you're inadvertently avoiding on that. And two, you may create problems for your executor in future, which will delay the administration of the estate, especially in instances where, for example, your beneficiaries don't agree to honor a letter of wishes. So if you are more prescriptive in your will, that is binding on all parties. And so your beneficiaries have less room to argue and make the administration process unnecessarily difficult. Another thing to consider with regards to taxes is that there is a possible deemed capital gains tax event when an individual passes away that a lot of people are unaware of. That's obviously where capital assets aren't bequeathed to a surviving spouse. There is a deemed capital gains tax event, and the drafter of your will should be aware of this to take into account whether or not there's sufficient liquidity in your estate to settle those additional taxes, like we've discussed previously with the situs taxes and the probate costs and additional things that aren't foreseen in the normal run-of-the-mill estates that are a little bit different. An additional piece of information that you can include in your will is if you feel strongly enough to direct any funeral or burial or cremation wishes, you can record that in your last will and testament, which can lead to a bigger conversation regarding living wills and powers of attorneys and incapacity issues, which I make the point merely to emphasize that a conversation with the drafter of your will goes beyond just getting down who your executor is going to be and who your heirs are. It involves a bigger consideration as to your affairs now, your affairs in the future, and your affairs once you've passed away. So to conclude the conversation, To summarize, it's important that you take a holistic view when drafting your will and considering your estate plan. And please reach out via our website if we can provide any further assistance in this regard.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.